On this episode, we have technical project manager James Burke.
We'll also talk about what it takes to be nominated for a Webby.
Star Trek and landing motherfucking rockets on shit.
This episode is brought to you by RiseUpTabletop.com. Do you feel it? The chain tying you to your desk and chair? Isn't it time for a change? Isn't it time to free yourself? Fuck! Time to give yourself a choice to sit, to stand, to move, to work freely. That time is now. Free yourself with a Rise Up tabletop, an affordable, lightweight, standing desk with built-in handle designed to move with you. The Rise Up tabletop is available for $189 and includes free shipping. Break the chain, free yourself, rise up. Order online now at riseuptabletop.com. That's riseuptabletop.com. Bitch.
Thunder. 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 Thunder.
Welcome to the Thunder Nerds, where your ears are our final frontier. This is JD Riot.
I'm Eric Shin.
And I am Frederick Philip Von Weiss. And you are listening to the Thunder Nerds, a design and developer discussion for all levels in the industry that simply love what they do and do web good. Man, the final frontier, huh? Little Star Trek?
Space. There are only three lights.
Three lights. He could have just told him there was a fourth light and just get it over with. Why go through all that bullshit?
There are four lights.
I'm pretty sure we're off about the lights. I think there were four and he was trying to tell him that there were three.
Yeah, no. That is it. I remember that. I remember there was four lights. Yeah. But yeah, and then that guy just kept beating the shit out of him. He could have just said, yeah, there's four lights. I'm good. Let's get on with it.
Yeah. Once they introduced the Borg, I was so set. Like, I was like, just make every episode this. That's right. Turn in Borg. Like, when he went away from the Borg, I was literally like, I don't even like you anymore.
Oh,
like,
and
Kirk.
Yeah.
I'm a Kirk fan.
Uh-huh. Nice. Speaking of space, we have a kind of a space-themed episode this week. We have on the show today technical project manager James Burke. Welcome, sir.
Hi, guys.
Hey, welcome to the show, James.
Hello, James.
We're very happy to have you on the show.
Thanks for having me on.
Why don't we start off with a little bit of context about you, brother? Can you give us a little bit about what you do, the difference between a project manager and a technical project manager is for people out there that might not get that?
Sure. So I've got a web background. I've been doing websites since 1994. A technical project manager basically is responsible for the success of the project. So I'm going to be organizing how we plan out the project, mobilize the team, gather requirements from the business folks, update and create the schedule with a list of the tasks assigned to each project team member, and communicate the status of the project to all the stakeholders. And some of that is what a project manager does. What I add to the table as well is I'm able to do some of the individual work on the project, such as building BI reports, creating user guides, doing some of the development work. So really helping out the team a little bit more and helping out with the success of the project. Really, we're the glue that holds all the other disciplines together. Any gaps in the skill set between the project team members we're going to fill.
Okay, so you're kind of like a project manager, but also a product designer as well and contributing to the project, right?
That's correct, yeah. So there's a project I'm working on right now where I did some of the initial UX design. I worked on some wireframes. I just did them in Visio. And then I handed that off to the real creative UX designers to go build the design composites that we're actually going to use to do development.
One of the main differences that I see right away is like a PM would be somebody that's just more kind of explaining the project and not organizing the data to communicate to developers or designers on what needs to be done. Whereas you're actually doing a lot of that work and communicating way more effectively, giving them a head start too.
Absolutely. And also just taking on some of the tasks. I think that's huge when you're able to be one of the team members and do the same type of work they do. It really builds a lot of confidence and trust across the team.
You're not only a touch point between you and the client, you're also contributing to the project, thus having more of a deep, intimate knowledge of what's going on.
Right. Exactly.
Do you find your company that you're working for currently has a lot of people in that role?
We have a few. We're somewhat of a small company. We're about 50 employees, and we have about 6 or 7 PMs.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So is there ever a turf war between TPMs and PMs? Just out of curiosity.
Is there what? I'm sorry?
like a turf war. I mean, to the technical project managers and the project manager. Yeah.
No, we work together pretty well. I think everyone understands their own skill set and really brings their best to the table. And we all get along really well, so.
That's cool. Do you guys use any, because you said there are 15 employees and you said 6 of them are TPMs. Like, are you guys outsourcing some of your projects or what's going on?
No, we have 50 employees. We're basically a full service technology marketing partner. We can take an idea from concept to reality, whether it's a website, online social media marketing campaign, a print campaign, or really any type of software development. Our team at the company Exelio is composed of a really strong set of developers, super creative UX folks, awesome marketing folks, and then of course the 6 project managers. And we're trying to build out our project management practice to be the best in the industry. So we're trying to really take some of the best practices that folks have out there to use methodologies like Agile and Scrum and bring that in. We do consulting for companies like Microsoft and Amazon and HP. So I'll have a project where I'm the PM and there's Microsoft team members, or we'll have other projects where folks at Exelio are the developers and there's another project manager outside the company. So things like that.
What kind of consulting does your company do for Microsoft?
Like I said, we just kind of run the gamut. We have developers, we have PMs, marketing and creative folks. So we'll help them run projects. I have a project right now that's a BI specific project where we're trying to report on an internal Microsoft product that's used for other companies to do risk assessments on their hardware. And so they'll basically run this tool and get information about how their SQL servers are set up or their SharePoint is set up or their Exchange is set up, get back a list of improvements they can make. And so we're doing BI reporting on all of those, you know, all those different reports coming in. I have another project where we're building a website for scheduling rooms at some of the buildings in Microsoft. So they have a reactor space down in San Francisco where they have startups incubating, and they want to have basically a website that people can go to book rooms. And so we're building that out as well right now. That one's something I'm currently working on. I mentioned before I was creating some wireframes for that, and I handed those off to our creative team to make them look awesome.
In some offices, you'll be using Google's platform, and you might use Google Calendar, and you say, okay, I'm going to have a meeting on Tuesday at 9 o'clock, and I'm going to add these people, and I'm going to schedule a room. I'm going to schedule office number or whatever. How is that different than what you guys are building for them?
It's similar. It's basically the same workflow, but there's a whole set of information they need to collect about what the type of event is and what needs they have for like catering and audiovisual and things like that. So they're asking the people that are requesting the room to put in a lot more information. Also things like who's coming, or they're going to be executives there, things like that.
Oh, okay. So that's way more in-depth, and I could see that being way more useful. Everybody would like to have something like that. So is that going to be something that you'll probably take to market as well?
Oh, it'll be used internally. Microsoft's got a lot of internal applications they use just for running the business. Yeah, there was another site I also worked on just to track events, like the developer events Microsoft puts on. And so we built this whole site to have the people that organize the events come to the site and enter in the event information, enter in how many people attended, what their survey results were, and all this metadata about the event, like the type of event and what audience it had, things like that.
Nice. So but, what's your role in that?
I was the project manager for both of those. So basically...
But I mean, are you also doing some development in that as well too?
I did some for the event tracker website. Yeah, we had to create an Excel-based planning form and have it map up to the website so that people could enter a bunch of stuff in Excel and mass upload a bunch of events at once to the website. So I did a whole bunch of macro magic in Excel to make sure that the database fields were populating and the database integrity would be maintained when they put in a bunch of information in the Excel form and uploaded it to the site.
That's cool.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that one.
Not everybody enjoys doing stuff in Excel. I could see where some people might go, eh. But yeah, I think that's very interesting to be able to do that and then incorporate that into that. You have to be creative in your thinking.
Yeah.
So how did you get your start in becoming a technical project manager?
Well, I was really interested growing up in computers overall, and I had a friend that worked at, his older brother worked at Microsoft in the 80s. So I would always hear stories about what Microsoft was like. And I went to college. I went to University of Florida, go Gators. And I was able to meet some of the people recruiting for Microsoft when I was a sophomore. And they told me about a role that they have at Microsoft called program manager. It's a little bit different than project manager because it's, again, it's more technical. They don't call it a technical project manager. They call it a program manager. But it's the same type of role where you're basically, you're expected to know some of the technical skills, but then do all the elements of being a project manager. So I heard about that role and it was like, wow, that's what I want to do. That's really fits me. Now, at the same time, when I was in college, the internet was just starting to become mainstream. I was able to pick up the Beginner's Guide to HTML and taught myself. And I was using basically just using Notepad, Windows Notepad, and an FTP client.
Yeah.
And I built
old school.
I built my homepage, and on the university network had my own little homepage. And then when I realized that I could build a website and anyone in the world could see it instantly when I uploaded it, that was really a religious experience for me. That was like, wow, I can sort of broadcast something, my information or whatever I want to say, and anyone in the world, as long as they know my web URL, they can see it instantly. That was huge for me. So that's when I knew I really wanted to do web stuff. And I got the opportunity to come to Microsoft when I graduated college, and I worked on the Office team, but I was the web guy. I was working on the web type features for Office 2000. And later on, I worked in MSN, so Microsoft's web portal. I got to work on pretty much everything MSN does. I got to work on the main portal, MSN.com. Some of the category portals they had, like Tech and Gadgets, City Guides. And I was also able to work on the toolbar they had. So really, whatever they were doing, I got my feet wet doing over the 7 years I worked at MSN.
That was an interesting time to be with them.
Yeah. And what was really cool is I got to fly out to New York City twice to work on a food website with Hearst Communications. Now it's called Delish.com. But I was able to do that as the project manager, and that was a lot of fun just to be able to travel like that.
Man, that was all back in the during the Windows 95 era, right?
That was a little more recent, like 2004, 2005, around that time.
Well, I was way off. Yeah, only 10 years.
I was gonna say, what a good time! Like 95 was not bad, man. You had like everybody. Then it was like everybody started complaining about like 98, and then they came out with like Home and all that other shit. And you're like, no, just give us 95 back. Like, everybody was saying, give me fucking 95 back for what, like 7-8 years? Like, it was so crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there's always that kind of bullshit with Microsoft. I think there's a lot of Microsoft haters out there.
Well, I think, you know, every company, there's reasons to like or hate them. I mean, there's definitely Apple haters out there, too. There's a lot of interesting things Microsoft is doing. Their cloud platform is really innovative, and there's a lot of, you can basically create a website on Windows Azure that is identical to your Linux-based Apache server, and then you can scale it instantly. So there's a lot of cool stuff on the cloud platform. They've also got this HoloLens product that they're going to come out with. That I don't know if you've seen any of the demos for that, but you can like literally play Minecraft in your room, having physical.
Oh yeah, dude, that
physical...
thing's so fucking cool. You could paint in like real time, like in 3D. That's amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, they've already got it out for the sweet, sweet price of about $800-$900 right now. It's delicious.
Oh, do they really, James? Is that true?
It's a developer kit.
Yeah.
But yeah, you can go pick it up. But
you can. I mean, it's not even it's past developer kits. The guy that I know that has it is a realtor. If you've just got the coin for it now, you can actually pick it up and start working with it.
Really? Man, didn't even know that was out already.
Yeah, I thought that was just something that was
in concept. You can really completely reskin your entire house. Like you could have nothing but complete white. You walk in and you throw those headphones on or the headset on, uh-huh. And you could do anything. I mean, they're getting into the point now where you can even do like I think what's in concept right now is being able to animate what you draw. So like say you walked into your house and you wanted to have like a beautiful like watercolor like rippling like campfire or something like that. It's going to be really interesting, like moving forward, seeing what they're going to do and like how many people are going to change, like take their whole houses. And it's like, you're going to walk in and be like, oh, what's going on? Like, and then you, like, they just hand you at the door, like, here, take off your shoes and put on this. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, it's like the HoloLens from Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah, exactly. It's freaking amazing.
I wonder if you're going to remove like obstacles. So like you walk in, you don't see it. It looks like a clear room and then you run into a sofa.
They'll paint a sofa. They'll paint like a different, say, sofa over that. I mean, it's not like they're gonna put like, you know, like a like for instance, mine would be Falcor. I would like to sit on Falcor all the time, so I would just do Falcor. And every time I would just scream, "Yeah!" and put my fists in the air.
Nice.
Or you have it visualizing that the pantry's always full, even though you only got like crackers and cheese and whatever.
Yeah, it's like ramen noodle, you go from like ramen noodles. I'm like, I'm eating ramen, but really it's steak. Yeah, it's steak.
James, how would you paint your house?
Oh, plaid.
See, I thought you were going to tell me the landscape of Mars, but plaid I kind of like.
I would take the WTF route. I would do a green screen for all the walls.
Just all green screen?
Yeah.
But then you have to go through and edit all that shit like with the Oculus or whatever they're, you know, not the Oculus specifically, but the one you refer like for Microsoft, yeah or even like the Sony VR and so that like you can literally just like scale the room, pick the colors you want. Like you're talking about like going in and doing posts, son. We're 2016, green screens are over.
Oh, yeah, that's the whole point. I mean, green screen just wouldn't work, but it looked like you could do something with it.
Although are you trying to be fucking retro, yeah. Motherfucker?
Hence the WTF, you know? It's like,
I'm retro 2020.
Yeah. Nice.
Or living in an aquarium would be kind of cool.
So speaking of award-winning stuff, James, you won WWW Awards, right?
The Webby Awards, yeah, and I didn't win it. My company did. We built a website called Yeti Society, YETISociety.com, and essentially what.
Oh, I if you've listened to the podcast, I know a lot about Yeti. Let's go talk. Tell me more about this society.
So it's essentially Exelio's marketing arm, and so you know we're composed of an excellent team of UX, web design, marketing professionals. And they built this site. I was the project manager on it briefly, really primarily managing the schedule, making sure that all the tasks were accomplished on time. There was an interest in getting the site done as soon as possible. This was late last year, so we finished it close to the first of this year. And then we submitted it to the Webby Awards, and we basically got honored by the Webbies. We didn't win our category, but we were in the top, I think, 8%. And so we were recognized by the International Academy of Digital Arts and Sciences as an official honoree. And if you go to the Webby website, we're listed in the Professional Services Web Design category.
Yeah, that's a big deal, dude. This is a fun website, too. Like, just going through, like, some of the things, like, I recommend for people to, like, go to the team section, hovering over the people where they, like, change their regular outfit. A guy in, like, lederhosen drinking a beer, and the girl with her dog. There's a lot of little fun things in it.
Yeah, it's really a cool site. I love the interactivity of it, and there's, you know, there's a blog component. There's the team, as you mentioned, with fun pictures. And it's a great little site. It really is a good kind of introduction to what Exelio can do with the concept. So,
well, it's nice to show off what your company can do. And you don't normally get to do all the fun things that you might want to do on a project. But this way you could kind of demonstrate a little bit of your talents and kind of give clients something to think about.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You know, one of the big things I wanted to talk to you about, James, is your love for Mars and the MarsSociety.org. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Absolutely. So the Mars Society is the world's largest and most influential space advocacy organization. And we're basically trying to come up with the tools and techniques to send people to Mars. And we want to open up Mars for human exploration and settlement. And
is that a two-way trip, or is this that the one-way trip?
We definitely want to bring people back. We don't want to just send people and have them die. That would be really bad form.
I think that's a pretty important clarification there.
A little bit.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty extreme just to say first.
Yeah, so the Mars Society is great. I've been part of the Mars Society since it was formed, around the time I graduated college back in 1998. I went to one of their annual conventions, and it really grew out of this guy, Dr. Robert Zubrin, who really wrote the book on how to go to Mars cheaply. He came up with this plan called Mars Direct back in the 90s when he worked for Martin Marietta, which is now Lockheed Martin, and came up with a plan that was really innovative, made use of Martian materials and the atmosphere to make rocket fuel. So you don't have to take with you to Mars as much as the previous plans. So the idea is you would send out to Mars before you send any people, you send out the return ship unfueled, and you bring with it a little bit of hydrogen. So when you get to Mars, you land that sucker on Mars, you suck in the Martian air, which is mostly carbon dioxide, you react it with the hydrogen to make methane. And so that's a chemical reaction that's been used in industry since the 1900s, since the late 1800s.
So let me ask you a question. Is this anything in the root of what Dr. von Braun did last century?
Well, a little bit. The problem with his plan and the plans that came for NASA that came before Mars Direct, where they were really huge expeditions. You're talking about sending 50 or 100 people to Mars in the first mission. And so von Braun wanted to build dozens and dozens of spacecraft and send them all at the same time. And so obviously that didn't happen because of the cost. They wanted to spend, and von, yeah, as far as we know, they wanted to spend as much as the cost of World War II for the United States to go to Mars, and that just wasn't going to happen. And another plan that came up with by NASA in the 90s was the 90-day report. So George Bush came up with this speech, and then NASA came up with the plan to go with it. And their plan was to build huge spacecraft in Earth orbit with multiple shuttle launches, and then send that to Mars and only spend 30 days there and then come back. And the cost that Congress estimated for that was $500 million. Or I'm sorry, $500 trillion. So it's $450 billion. So obviously that,
yeah, that's a,
that didn't get funded.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, I love it when, like, it's a, and far be it, like, people don't remember that too much, but, like, because they kind of, like, they shut it down so quickly, but it was, like, that's when you start making promises with your mouth that your checkbook can't cash. Like, it's a lot of money, man. Like, it's crazy.
Yeah, so that's how the Mars Direct plan was born out of that effort, because Lockheed Martin folks, including Dr. Zubrin, knew that that wasn't going to succeed. So they came up with a really cheap on the down low plan that was able to do the Mars mission using the in situ propulsion propellant. So they were able to build the, you know, like I said before, come up with a spacecraft that would get fueled on Mars. And once it was fueled, you'd send the people and use the spaceship to come back. And you could do all that for less than $10 billion. Actually, the figures could be as low as $5 or $6 billion, just depending on what the cost is to launch a spacecraft to Mars from Earth. But you wouldn't be building them in Earth orbit. You just, one launch would send the spacecraft to Mars from the surface of the Earth. And that's really how missions have been done. You know, if you look at all the planetary exploration missions, it's like the Curiosity rover and some of the missions to Jupiter and Saturn, they don't launch a bunch of spacecraft into Earth orbit and assemble them and then have it go. They'll just launch one and have it go directly to its destination.
Yeah, what's interesting about that too is like the cost for that will probably be even more less, or, you know, lesser than it is now with the whole, like, SpaceX, you know, being able to actually, like, retrieve and reuse rockets. I mean, that's going to save so much money.
Yeah, SpaceX, what they're doing right now is huge. If they're able to make their Falcon 9 rockets reusable, then the cost, they're already the cheapest rockets in the industry. But if they're able to make them even cheaper by making them reusable, then the cost really goes down. And then that's where you can start opening up space and doing things like a moon base and a Mars mission, a Mars colony, really. And that's what SpaceX wants to do. They're publicly talking about sending a mission to Mars, an unmanned mission to Mars in a couple years, but then following that with human missions and a colonization effort. And that's all coming very fast.
Have you heard about any kind of terraforming before we do anything like that? Or is there any kind of agenda for terraform?
Well, terraforming would be a huge project, because then you're talking about 100 years or more of trying to make Mars more Earth-like. And the amount of resources that would require is just mind-boggling.
Well, it's something that we could start planning now.
Yeah, and SpaceX has talked about doing what you just said. They got laughed at a little bit in the press, but I think it's a legitimate proposal, because you want to make humans a multi-planet species. Ultimately, you don't want Earth to be our sole home. In case something ever happened, then we'd be dust.
It'd also help us reach more destinations.
Absolutely. Human beings are explorers, and it's in our nature. And so we need to find that next frontier and open it up. And right now that's space.
Yeah.
Soon it will be multidimensional.
Shit, you never know.
The idea of terraforming is awesome to me. I mean, how exactly would one start terraforming? I mean, what's the gist of that?
You need to get that water that's in the ice cap and make that liquid water.
Yeah, another thing you could do is go find a comet, a water-rich comet, and crash that into Mars. That would do the same thing. You want to get some liquid water on the surface, and so that you can grow algae and lichens and really start transforming the atmosphere into oxygen and thickening it.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say. It's like we're almost at the point now where, you know, where we can, hell, we just with when the what the last 5 years landed a rocket on a moving comet. So it's like we could, in essence, start moving comets either out of our atmosphere, putting them into planets, obviously, like liquid water planets, to try and start that up. I mean, like, it's crazy where we are right now in space, what we're starting to do.
Yeah, I can't even imagine the next 10 years what things we're going to be able to accomplish. It just grows exponentially.
Yeah, and it's all about reducing the cost to send stuff. If SpaceX is able to do it, you're going to really see an acceleration of all this stuff happening. You're going to see people going back to the moon, living on the moon. And it might not even be Americans. You know, the Chinese, the Russians, they've been talking for a long time about establishing a moon base. So you might see them do that.
Chinese just put that rover on the moon?
That's right, yeah. A couple years ago, Jade Rabbit is the name of it.
Yeah, Jade Rabbit. And that hasn't been done in a long time, obviously. So, I mean, they're getting ready to make some big steps.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it hasn't been done since the Russians had rovers on the moon in the 70s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think China has enough resources to do a few things like that if they wanted to.
Yeah. Eventually, we've got to get back to, like, what would just up it all is if we just went to the, like, I mean, if we just dropped borders, man, and just went to a shared planet, like, that whole, like, it's that Star Trek kind of reality. It's like you're not really spending money. It's just humans working towards bettering humanity and, like, just the ugly dissipation of money would be fantastic if everybody was just like work on like helping each other, you know, hydroponics, make sure everybody's fed, you know, make sure everybody's got like a goal, you know, a shared human ideal of like, hey, let's go out and do this. It'd be really cool. And like, hey, we've got the resources. Why do we really need money? Eliminate the need for it. You know, that we crave a class system. We do. We crave a class system as a human, as people. Like, you know what it was in Star Trek is like when the Vulcans came down and introduced themselves, that's when it started. You know what I mean? Like, that's when everything kind of changed.
It was after World War III because there was no people that had a summer home in Connecticut. So they didn't have anything that they had to protect. You know, they didn't have any real estate that they said, yeah, I'm not going to hand out food to poor people. Because I got payments on my Lexus. So everybody was at a equal playing field. And then the Vulcans came down and they were like, yeah, okay, cool. Let's try this out.
Yeah, it'll be different if like an alien race comes down, because then it won't be like those damn Mexicans. It'll be humans. We're all humans. And these are something else. And like, let's work together.
Exactly. Yeah, we're all going to come together and say, yeah, those slimy green skin bastards. And we'll start having some of that retro Russian war propaganda posters.
Yeah, exactly. We are such simple creatures.
Yeah, we really are at the root.
Yeah, human
Hopefully
beings
it'll
are
be
very
somebody
tribal.
That can come down and help us out. Human beings we are very tribal.
Yeah, we're it's always us versus them, no matter who the us and the them are. That's always our mindset.
And we always celebrate that. If you look at any kind of book or movie, look at the Ender's Game series. Like, it was always like us and them kind of thing. First thing I could think of with space.
Ender's Game? Yeah, that's a good reference, though. Like, I was proud. I'm over here like, yeah, you talk about Ender's Game, motherfucker.
I wasn't a fan of the movie.
No, the book was amazing.
Yeah, the movie, they just fucking... It was brutal. Ugh. And that kid was a shitty actor. He really was. James, I want to ask you what your career goals are for the future. Do you see yourself doing more project management, product designer kind of role, more of a director kind of role? Or is this what you're going to be doing in the... And I'm not talking about your immediate future. I'm talking maybe 10, 20 years down the line. Where do you see yourself going? Like, what do people that are in this role in what you're doing, where do they go 10, 15, 20 years in the future? What does that mm-hmm. look like?
Yeah, I think as a project manager, you always want to better yourself, get certifications, build new skills. Recently, I was able to go get a PMP certification, which was a really difficult test to study for, but I went ahead and spent about, I don't know, 70, 80 hours studying for that and got the certification.
Before we go into that, James, I just want to, if you don't mind me asking, what is a PMP exam?
A PMP is a project management professional exam. It's basically testing you on your knowledge of running projects, of the project management methodology, and just how all that works. There were a lot of questions like, okay, here's the situation with the project. What do you do next? Sort of questions.
Gotcha. Okay. So continue with your thought about the future.
Yeah, no, for me, I love what I'm doing right now. I could be a technical project manager for the next 20 years and I'd be happy. But I think it's all about keeping current. The IT field changes so rapidly that you can't stand still. You've got to learn new skills. You've got to learn the new technologies or you're going to be, you know, caught with that flat-footed. And so for me, it's just making sure that I'm bettering myself, getting new skills, getting new certifications to prove that I know the skills and working on cool projects. I mean, I've had the opportunity in my career to work on a lot of really cool websites. And I want to keep doing that as the web continues to evolve. I want to keep doing things that are cutting edge.
Oh, that's awesome, man. Yeah, it's such a broad stroke of a position that you literally could be in it as it adapts and as it changes. And, you know, the respect level, I think, that you get as somebody who's hands-on. Doesn't matter really what you call yourself and so like that, but if you're going to touch a project along with your team, no matter whether you're a retail manager, a project manager on a website, all those things take the respect level of your team up to like that next level. They know that they can crutch back on you if they need to, you know, if they can't figure something out versus, oh, you know, well, hey, we got to get it done for the client. Like, dude, fuck you. Don't come in here and talk to me like that. You know what I mean? Tell me you just need me to do something. Help me figure this out. But, you know, that being said, James and everybody listening, tell your bosses to fuck you if they don't work on shit with you. But thanks.
That's a good point.
Thanks a lot, man, for coming on, man. It's the team that actually works together sticks together, man. But like, you know, we want to thank you very much for coming on. We're running a little bit long, but for a good reason. You know, we wish you the best in the future, man. And hopefully somebody listens to this and thinks to themselves, you know what? I too want to be a project manager that thinks about Mars.
Thank you very much, guys. I really enjoyed the time.
That won't help. I have many more. Still, it felt good. Enjoy your good feelings while you can. There may not be many more of them. I've just received word. There's been a battle. The Enterprise is burning in space. The invasion of Minos Corva has been successful.
You don't believe it.
There's no need for any further information from you. Our troops were successful in spite of your refusal to help me. You might have saved yourself a great deal of torment by yielding at the beginning.
I want to see a neutral representative.
There is no such person. The word will be that you perished with your crew. No one will ever know that you are here with us, as you will be for a long time. Long time. You do, however, have a choice. You can live out your life in misery, held here, subject to my whims. Or you can live in comfort with good food and warm clothing, women as you desire them, allowed to pursue your studies of philosophy and history. I would enjoy debating with you. You have a keen mind. It's up to you. A life of ease, of reflection, and intellectual challenge. Or this.
What must I do?
Nothing, really. Tell me how many lights you see. How many? How many lights? This is your last chance. The guards are coming. Don't be a stubborn fool.
How many?
You told me he would be ready to go.
We had some unfinished business.
Get him cleaned up. A ship is waiting to take him back to the Enterprise. Captain Picard. If you'll go with the guards, they'll take care of you.
Oh! Four! Nine!